and welcome to this episode of the Postural Restoration Podcast. I'm so excited today. We have a faculty member, Dan Hooglum, here in Lincoln, and we have the chance to sit down today, Dan, to kind of go over your history and timeline of you will, if you will, of your involvement with the Institute. Dan has his Master's of Science in Physical Therapy. He's an athletic trainer. Dan, do you know what year you got your PRC?
Yeah, PRC 2012.
Class of 2012 PRC. Dan recently also was awarded the PRI Director's Award for ongoing dedication and involvement with our science and with the Institute. So congratulations on that in April, Dan. Well deserved.
Thank you, sir.
The other thing I want to quickly say about Dan is I don't know if there's, put it this way, very few people that have taken more courses through our Institute in the amount of time that Dan has. I think I looked, Dan, before you came last week or so, and it was upwards of, 44, 45 courses in the span of however many years.
So. Yeah, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Yeah, I don't know if I'm just that slow of a learner or what the problem is there, but
I'm not sure, but for whatever you stuck around, and today you're here on faculty, and we'll quickly mention, you're going to be instructing myokinematic restoration here at the Institute tomorrow, so
yep.
Very excited to listen to that and have you here for the weekend. Dan graduated from South Dakota State University, SDSU. Just recently found out that your father was a faculty member there, yep, as well, growing, yep, up.
And yep. Dr. Hooglum, pharmacy department, for 30 years.
Near and dear to your heart, so it was kind of probably like being at home.
It was, exactly.
As I mentioned, so he did receive a bachelor's of athletic training, SDSU University, in 1997. Dan, you graduated from Des Moines University in 1999 with your master's of science in physical therapy. I don't know if it was Lori, the University of Des Moines has come up from time to time in other podcasts and conversations, within the Institute. It's really, at that time and still today, really known for being such a high-level osteopathic school and community. Yeah. Do you want to kind of maybe, give us some insight into how you got from South Dakota State to interest in Des Moines? Proximity, sure, is one thing, but also the status of, like we said, their osteopathic program. Were you interested in the holistic osteopathic type teaching?
Yeah, I didn't really know a whole lot about Des Moines as an osteopathic school, and that was kind of what it's known for, was its osteopathic school. And this will kind of be like a running theme today. First of all, RJ, thanks for having me. Glad to be here. It'll be kind of a running theme where a lot of things have just kind of been fortuitous. Like to end up in Des Moines, as I was graduating from SCSU, I had applied to three schools. Mayo in Rochester, Minnesota, University of South Dakota in-state, and then Des Moines University. Now, the only reason why I applied to Des Moines is a classmate of mine who graduated a year before, she had gotten into the school there and really liked it. And so she would come back to SDSU. She was in the athletic training department as well, and she'd come back for, homecoming and this and that, and she knew I was applying to PT school, and so she gave me some feedback and said it was a really, really good school. She really enjoyed it. And that's the only reason I applied there, because I needed a third school, and Carrie Neese was her name. She's married now, but her maiden name was Neese, Carrie Neese, and she had glowing things to say, so I applied there. So my interview at Mayo was a disaster. My interview at University of South Dakota got snowed out. I couldn't make it, and I didn't reschedule.
Sounds like a South Dakota interview.
It was just a blizzard in the end of February, so I couldn't drive the 2.5 hours to Vermilion to get the interview. But I interviewed in Des Moines, and the interview went really, really well, and I ended up getting in. So I really had no other option but to end up in Des Moines. And if I didn't go to Des Moines for PT school, I'm not sure I'm in PRI today. I very well might have.
PT school? I mean, is that safe to, I mean.
No, I would have been. Well,
you would have still gone to PT school.
I still would have gone to PT school. I would have applied then, worked and applied then the next year. I was going to be a physical therapist. I knew since I was a sophomore in high school I wanted to go to physical therapy school. But the fact that I got to Des Moines and got the osteopathic background, which I didn't know I was going to be getting, and didn't realize, obviously, at the time, how valuable that would be in my subsequent PRI journey, having that heavy anatomical, kinematic, osteopathic, manual background has really served me well from a mechanical standpoint in PRI.
Well, and that's, I think, you know, as I mentioned, that's probably the biggest reason why DMU, Des Moines University, I think since then they've changed their name
It was the University of Osteopathic Medicine when I was there.
So now that,
and now it's Des Moines University, but I graduated in 99. Ben Westby, who was Ron's first hire of the Institute, graduated in 2000. And then he left to go to the Miami Dolphins. And then Jason Masick, who graduated from the same university. So there was three of us kind of in the same amount of time that had some little carryover. Like, I didn't know Jason. Jason and I just missed each other academically, but all about the same time.
Yeah. Well, we're fortunate to have it here in the Midwest. It's obviously a huge, you know, asset's not the right word because we don't really, you know, it doesn't benefit us, but it's known for its reputation here in our region and, you know, where you grew up. And
I really enjoyed my time there. It served me well.
Yeah. Well, and I kind of, it came out naturally, but I was going to ask, you know, at what point you decided on going into PT. You know, you mentioned since I was a sophomore in college or high school.
My aunt, my dad's sister, so my dad's a PhD, so he's Dr. Hoaglum. His sister is a PhD. She taught athletic training at Duquesne University for a number of years, and so she's a PhD, Dr. Hoaglum, as well. So I have no interest in kind of following that lineage. But anyway, she's been one of my mentors over the course of time. She is a physical therapist, athletic trainer, and when I was growing up, like, she worked the 1984, she lived in L.A., and she worked the 84 Olympic Games in L.A., Then she traveled with the women's volleyball team nationally, worldwide. And so I saw what she did, and when my, you know, NBA basketball career wasn't going to pan out, you know.
Dan's not the most vertically gifted.
No. And so the next big thing was working with athletes. That was my intent, was to work with athletes, because that's what she did. And so when I was a sophomore in high school, they have these kind of, you know, aptitude career day kind of thing. Yeah. They take a couple of tests, and so the director of the athletic training program at South Dakota State University came in and gave a talk, and I was like, yes, that's what I want to do. That's what my aunt does.
Yeah.
So from a sophomore in high school, that was kind of what I knew what I wanted to do. And looking back, I was pretty fortunate that at that time, so entering college, I had a plan. It was going to be athletic training undergrad, then apply to PT school. And
which for a lot of people, you know, they end up in a doctorate program, not even, let's say it's not even physical therapy, but a lot of people end up in that program not having that plan in place, you know, for whatever reason. They end up there, they never thought they would be there. For you, it was kind of a more of a goal.
That was kind of the end game from day one. So but I listened to Lori Thompson's podcast not long ago, and she was like, she said that I didn't really want outpatient orthopedic physical therapy wasn't really on her radar. That was the only thing on my radar. You know. And that's the beauty of physical therapy, is there are so many other ways so many different ways you can apply the rehab concepts. So that was my end game, was sports medicine, orthopedics, and that's kind of how I went into it. That was part of the reason why I did undergraduate athletic training. I played basketball at SDSU for my first 2 years. Once again, the NBA dream, you know, obviously wasn't going to work out, and I'm half kidding, I had no aspirations for the NBA, but played basketball there my first 2 years, wanted to get into the athletic training program, so I quit playing basketball, got into the athletic training program for my junior and senior year, and then went from there to PT school.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I was kind of curious, you know, not just, you mentioned you were actually playing basketball, but what sports did you enjoy most, you know, while you were at SDSU for athletic training? Did you, you know, work with any particular sports? Did you enjoy some more than others?
Yeah, I rotated through, my first year I rotated through women's volleyball, wrestling, which I did not like, and partly because I didn't know enough about it, because wrestling happens the same as basketball season.
Yeah.
So I never really saw wrestling, or
exactly.
So I didn't really know enough about it walking in. And then I did a high school outreach, but then as a senior, I spent half the year with the football team, which was a great experience, learned a lot there. And then the second semester, I worked with the baseball team, traveling, and again, a great experience. Having played football, obviously, that was more comfortable, but not having played baseball beyond, like, Little League, you know, it was a really good experience to be exposed to a completely different sport altogether and how to manage kind of those issues. And So, again, those experiences kind of helped me get it when I'm looking at PRI, having that background of working with baseball for 6 months really has helped as well. Yeah. But football and baseball were great. I really enjoyed those experiences.
The cool thing is, I think, too, Dan, Jen and I, as you know, attend, and Jason was there this year giving a talk.
Oh, but, the NATA convention?
We attend the NATA, the National Athletic Training Convention, every year. And, you know, I'm not here to dog on any profession or any thought process, for that matter, but some of the questions that the athletic training community have, and they're not always asked because they'd rather ask them to you one-on-one than in the middle of their lecture hall.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned this kind of biomechanic background that I think, you know, athletic training really is so cool because of that experience. Part of it is the amount of time you spend alone just with a sport, you know, a GA or as a volunteer, whatever it may
for
be
sure.
in
yep.
the athletic training field. Those guys, you know, some of those guys are more gifted when it comes to knowledge of biomechanics and kinematics and
definitely.
Sports physiology and exercise science, you know, really a gift to be able to have that background.
And it's particularly when you have to spend that amount of time with one sport.
Yeah.
You know, I only did 6 months of baseball, but I can't imagine being with either college or higher level sports team and you're with that sport
all the time.
You're going to know the mechanics.
Yep.
I mean, you don't have a choice but to know that.
Well, and once in a while, you know, after the fact, if you were, let's say, professionally involved with a sport as an athletic trainer, you almost, in a way, get a tunnel vision.
A little bit.
You know, aspect of, I know this sport and these biomechanics behind this rotational athlete so well that you can kind of miss other pieces of the puzzle, but... You know, having the ability to work with various sports and many of them is definitely, I think, a great experience.
Yeah, it was a very, very worthwhile, and it really kind of helped perpetuate my what I wanted to do as a long term
clinically.
Yeah.
Well, and that kind of takes us into our next little section here. Once you finished up with your Master's of Physical Therapy in Des Moines. Basically, ever since then, you have resided in the state of Illinois and kind of built and started your career in Illinois. A lot of the times, guests kind of, you know, it's either a story about how they met their spouse or how you ended up where you are. Walk us through how you got from Des Moines, Iowa to Illinois, starting off a career. Was it a job position, availability? What brought you there?
So when I graduated from PT school in June of 99, a lot of my undergraduate athletic training friends also were graduating at the same time from varying other graduate level programs. And so there was like eight of us. And so we decided to go to the National Athletic Trainers Convention in Kansas City, Missouri, June of 99, as kind of our last kind of hurrah before we actually have to be adults, with no intention of attending any courses at all, right?
We'll say we're going there for educational purposes.
No, it was definitely not educational purposes. So at that conference, the director of my program, Jim Boer, was, I believe, getting inducted into the NATA Hall of Fame that weekend. My dad, being the pharmacy professor, had written an article for the NATA journal
Very
and was
cool.
won the award for the best non-research article of the year for the journal. Ron actually was presenting a protonics talk at that particular conference, and I met my wife there.
So this was 99.
This is 99.
That's a big conference.
That's all one conference. And so it just, again, was my wife happened to, I obviously didn't know her prior to then. It was a chance meeting. She happened to kind of be introduced to our group because our group grew from us eight guys to about 20 with bringing in other people from my classmates' grad school. So it ended up being like 20, 25 of us. My wife was one of that other group that kind of came along that we kind of merged three or four different schools together. And that's how I met her. And she happened to be an athletic trainer in Chicago at the time. And at that time in 99, it was kind of an odd time for physical therapy because Medicare had just changed its reimbursement rules in January of 99, which meant that there were a lot of hospitals laying off seasoned physical therapists at that time. So us new grads had a difficult time finding a job. So I kind of put out feelers to friends of mine, and I just met her. And so I put feelers out, and I got responses from various people, including her. And so I had came to an interview in Chicago, got the job there, and she's the only person I know in the area. And
this was perfect, you know.
So you know, we got to know each other and started dating, and then we eventually got married. She went to PA school at Marquette, and she's a PA and PA ATC, and I'm a PT ATC, and so that's kind of how that started. But I ended up in Illinois because really, that's where the job was. Yeah, that's where I knew somebody who could kind of help me with, you know, getting integrated into the, you know, the social environment that was new to me because I was going from Des Moines to Illinois. Yep. And it just, that's where the opportunity happened to be. And then I'd started that job, and I'd only been there like, I mean, I just put a first and last down on an apartment and just started this job. I hadn't even got my first paycheck yet, and Ron calls me.
And I'll, so did you, so we'll kind of diverge here. Did you meet Ron at the NATA convention?
So, well, the first time I met Ron was I was a PT student, and the way my particular school, the way Des Moines University did it, I don't know if they still do this, but you would be in school for a chunk of time, then go out and do a clinical, come back, learn some more, go out and do a clinical. So the clinicals were interspersed during the educational process. So the first year was all your basic anatomy stuff, and I learned all the muscle energy, kinematics, myokinematics, all those things in that first year. So my first clinical rotation was orthopedic in nature, and I originally was going to try to set one up working with my aunt, who was in Chicago at the time, PT ATC aunt. Well, timing didn't work, and then it just didn't quite happen, and by the time that we had figured out that it wasn't going to happen, I was really kind of out of options. And my memory is that the only clinical affiliation that was available to me at that time was St. Elizabeth's in Lincoln, Nebraska. So this is summer. This is like April of 1998.
And is that like a recommendation from someone in Des Moines?
No, that was at this point all my other classmates.
The only option.
Yeah, at this point, all my other classmates had been assigned places, and so my instructor was like, "Here is my." Maybe there was two options, I can't remember, but anyway, my recollection is really my best and only good option was St. Elizabeth's in Lincoln, Nebraska. And it just so happened that a classmate of mine in PT school, born and raised in Lincoln, Nebraska, her name is Addie Reed, she's now Addie Vance, and she lives in Des Moines at this point, but her parents, Dr. Jerry Reed, who knows Ron, and Portia, they were gracious enough to have me live there for the 2 months that I was driving to St. Elizabeth's. And so that's why, I think that's the reason why it ended up being my best option, is I could live for free.
Well, and who knows, the other option could have been like East Coast, West Coast.
Right,
like,
and I had to find
you either fly here or you could drive to Lincoln.
Exactly. So that's why my recollection is that it was really only my best option, is to go to St. Elizabeth's. Now, this is 98. The Institute Ron starts is in 2000. So I walk in, and it's like physical therapy department is in St. Elizabeth's Hospital, but it's an outpatient setting, and there's like 8 or 10 physical therapists, and I'm getting oriented with my clinical instructor, and I see Ron going from room to room to room and treating patients, and I kind of met all the other staff at that point, so I asked my clinical instructor, his name was Kirk, and I said, who's this guy? And he goes, oh, that's Ron. He's a physical therapist, but I don't know what he does. So I'm this 1 year into PT school. Now that you've got another year left in PT school. And my clinical instructor is a 12-year veteran. Okay, he's not a newbie. He's been out of PT school 12 years. These two guys, Kirk and Ron, have the same degree.
Same department.
Same department. They're co-workers. And Kirk doesn't know what Ron does. So now I'm interested. And then the way this department did it is if you went to a continuing education course, you were expected to have like a lunch and learn kind of session. Yeah. And kind of disseminate the information to your colleagues. And so it just so happened that that lunch and learn that week, which is now this is like Wednesday of that first week, the physical therapist had gone to a muscle energy rib course. Well, given that my background is osteopathic and muscle energy, I had just done rib muscle energy the previous couple of months in Des Moines. So it was fresh on my mind. And as any of us have taken any kind of rib courses, it's very easy to mix up your rib internal and external rotation, particularly if you're looking at it from the back, from the front, you know. Mm-hmm. They're very easy to get confused. And so she was confusing her internal and external rotations, and so I'd kind of raise my hand and say, I think you might have IR and ER mixed up, and she'd correct herself, and I did it again, and she corrected herself. It's a very common, easy mistake to make. As we're Ron's in the room. I don't know why Ron's in the room. This is not...
Or why he's even tolerant.
Why he's there, I don't know. So as we're walking out, Ron's like, hey, what are you doing right now? What are you up to? And I'm like, nothing. He goes, want to see something cool? Sure. So he takes me into a room and has me shadow with him with his next patient or two and shows me PRI, which I didn't know what it was, obviously.
Which was not PRI yet.
Right, it was just him treating patients.
It was kind of his science,
right?
Yeah.
So he'd show me stuff, blow my mind, and say, hey, there you go. See you later. Not explain it to me. Well, I'm not going to get it anyway. You know, to his credit, I'm not going to get it. So here, there you go. Look at that. Isn't that cool? See you later. So over the course of the next 2 months...
Which is the same treatment your department head, Kurt, you know.
Yeah, kind of.
Same deal for him.
Right.
Know?
So over the next 2 months, it was Ron saying, do you want to see something cool? I would say, yes, of course. He would show something cool, blow my mind, not explain it to me, do it again tomorrow. So by the time I left, I'd seen Ron, I don't know, half dozen, 10 times, something like that. And it kind of whet my appetite for it. I don't know what this is, but it is not regular physical therapy. And he was doing stuff that was, like, blowing my mind. At that point, it's the first time I got introduced to protonics. I think the department had 4, 5, 6 of them, and the therapists were using them. They didn't know why. All they knew is it worked. And all they knew, it went on their left leg.
Well, that's a start.
That's a start, right.
We've had other people confused about that.
Yeah. But the department used it quite a bit. So that was my first exposure to protonics and being introduced to a very powerful instrument and not... Obviously, at that point, having no clue why it only went on the left leg.
Well, and I'll just kind of, just a quick side note, if you get the chance or if you have or haven't listened to Ron's initial first episode kind of on the foundation of the Institute and how it came about and the reasoning behind the science and, you know, the coursework, the protonics unit really opened up the door. It was a way that opened up the entire Institute to be able to go into these areas and these concepts, but at the same time, you had to start with something.
Yeah, start somewhere. That's right.
You know, people didn't know why it worked or how it worked, but they knew it activated a hamstring.
Right.
Okay, so why does it activate a hamstring, and why are you trying to activate the left hamstring?
And why just the left one? Yeah, like you said.
So it was, you know, he kind of talks about... how that allowed him to get into actually founding the Institute because of the protonics unit. So it definitely was awesome to be able, you know, for you, you're getting exposure of something and then leaving. So
right.
Like, what the heck did I just experience? But
so then I see Ron again at the NATA convention in 99. He remembered me. So it was nice to see him again and just chit-chat real quick. And then October of 99, I just moved in, started this job, put down my first and last down payment on an apartment, and he calls me, and it's like Thursday. He's like, hey, we're doing a one-day course. Might even have been a protonics course, to be honest, in Chicago on Sunday. You want to come? And I'm like, I really don't have the means or opportunity. I just moved in. I mean, I just, like, I'd started the job the day before. I mean, I just didn't really have the wherewithal to be able to do it. And then I kind of forgot about PRI for the next several years. Then I got back on the train. But
yeah. Well, and that would have been... 99, you said, right?
Yeah, October 99.
So it probably was a protonics course because the Institute...
One day.
Or maybe they used to do, as you might be aware of, they kind of did a postural myokin combination
hybrid
course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before those were dedicated to their own two courses. So you kind of got your foot on the ground and out of PT school, started, you know, with a kind of a sports medicine rehab clinic.
Yeah, so it was kind of the same setup as St. Elizabeth's. It was a hospital-owned outpatient physical therapy clinic. And so I was doing sports medicine and, you know, started taking Con Ed within the first year and, you know, figuring out, learning what I didn't know and where I needed to kind of grow with my strengths. And given this osteopathic background, my intent initially was to get some sort of manual certification of some kind until my hands started to get sore. So I was doing manual, like, 7, 8, 9 hours a day.
Yeah.
So my day either consisted of manual work or protocol work, post-op, pick your poison, whatever the flavor of the day was. But that was pretty much my day. And it got to the point where, kind of like we had talked earlier, when you're seeing the same thing over and over and over again, sometimes you get a bit myopic.
Yeah.
And you start, you know, not seeing the big picture. My hands were then getting sore. And I was thinking, is this what the next 25 years are going to look like for me? What, I can't keep doing this if my hands are this sore and I'm not even 30 at this point. And so right about that time, I'd switched jobs and I got into more of a private practice kind of thing. And then 2004 rolls around and Ben Westby, who was Ron's first hire, I went to PT school with him. He calls me and he's like, hey, Ron is doing a course in Chicago. Do you want to come? And I was like, oh, yes.
Like this guy won't ever, this guy won't ever leave me alone.
Right. And I was like, yes, I'll be there. I'll be there. I'm in. I totally forgot, and I'm in. And it's a good thing I did because my hands have thanked me ever since because it's now I don't have to use my hands doing that stuff, you know?
Well, and quick question while you're on the topic of manual work. At the time, in that sports rehab kind of outpatient sports medicine setting, did you take us through how a typical manual session would vary from that perspective versus how we use it in PRI? I mean, were you focused a lot on thoracic spinal mobilization?
No.
So walk us through the differences between how you would treat manually today or what a typical manual session was for you back then.
So back then I used it a lot on SI joints,
lower
lumbar spine, FRS, ERS, cervical spine, OA joints, and that's where I use the muscle energy the most. Trigger point.
Mobilization type activity, though.
Just regular stuff to be able to get things to move better or to inhibit muscle tone, whatever. Today, I use the PRI manual techniques
when needed.
And my goal in every training session is to not have to. My goal every time is to not need to do manual.
Yeah.
And so the better I've gotten at the PRI non-manual techniques, the less I've had to do the PRI manual techniques over the course of 15 years.
Well, and correct me if I'm wrong, as you know, you are way more clinically active and intelligent than I am. But as you mentioned, the goal of our manual techniques is kind of something that is there to be utilized should you need them.
Yeah.
And if you do need them, you shouldn't need them forever.
Right.
And so the goal is to get you from a manual technique to being able to do non-manual activities.
And it's more of a, obviously PRI, it's more of a guidance.
Exactly.
To introduce the system, this is what we're talking about, this is what we're looking for, to show them the way so that they can pick up on it. Oh, that's what you're talking about, and then be able to pick it up and go from there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's completely different. Completely different.
Well, and it's kind of that concept that we discussed of a myopic viewpoint or a tunnel vision of, you probably never considered that until maybe going to a course with Ben or getting back involved with this other science. Well, what am I doing here? And why am I going home with calluses on my fingers?
And it got to the point where, you know, three, four, 5 years in, I'm like, is this really all there is to physical therapy? Stretching and strengthening? That's it? That's the gamut? There's really, because that's what I'm doing all day, every day.
Yeah.
Until then, I started. My first course then was like March of 2004.
Yep, and that looks like what I had found as well was myokinematic.
Yep, myokin, March of 2004. And it was kind of a myokin pelvis hybrid.
Okay.
And it was in south side of Chicago, southwest side of Chicago. And Ben was there. Two of his friends were there. A guy from the Chicago Bears. There was only probably 8 or 10 of us, maybe 8 of us, in the class at all. And I got material, and then I started to recognize what I'd seen when I was a student with Ron, you know, 5 years before that, and started, sort of put pieces together. And so I got excited and started doing it. And then I was like, I got to take another class. My second class then was October of 2004 in Minneapolis. I sat there in the first hour, and it was a MFC Suites auditorium. It was huge. There's probably 50 or 60 people there. It was postural respiration, which I think at the time was actually called Restoration.
Yep.
I'm sitting there in the first hour and Ron's talking and I'm like, I don't have a clue what he's talking about. I don't have any idea. And my brain just kind of shut off. I don't remember much of anything at all from that particular class because I was so lost so early on. I mean, my least favorite topic in PT school was anything neurology, neuromechanics, neuroanatomy, neuro anything. Because my whole goal was to be sports medicine orthopedic. I don't need this neurology stuff. I don't need to learn this at all.
Yeah.
Well, obviously, I'm wrong for on a variety of fronts. Well, and but
you know, other people sat. You know, I feel it's unfortunate for them to have that lost attitude because it's not fun. You don't want to go right. to a course and be lost in the first 20 minutes.
Right.
But it challenges you, and a lot of people, unfortunately, go into some of those primary courses having the orthopedic,
yeah.
you know, mindset, and it kind of hits you in the face pretty early that yeah. that this right. isn't your typical orthopedic
yeah.
course.
So then, that was October. So I didn't take another course for 2 years because my attitude at that point was, I'm either going to do this or I'm not. So I took 2 years and went through the coursework, went through the manuals, and practiced it and did it and looked and read and practiced it and did it and spent 2 years basically going through it to feel like the next course I took, I would at least have an idea of what Ron was talking about. And the next course I took then was in 06. And then it happened to be at the Cantrell Center, Mike Cantrell's place in Warren Robins, Georgia. And that's when I got back into doing PRI. And so from 06 on, that's really where I started to be more involved in taking more classes and yeah, yeah. And seeing better results and doing it more often. And really since probably, I don't know, 07, 08, this has really pretty much been the only treatment approach that I've used. I mean, probably 98%. I do some other things, but 98% of what I do is PRI at this point.
And that's awesome. We don't want people to feel like, you know, this is the way or the highway, you know, it's like
or nothing.
But the cool thing about PRI is that you can say you use PRI as a 98% approach, but the cool thing is PRI brings in all these other concepts and approaches. Sure.
Well, you can still use PRI in the weight room.
Exactly.
So or you can
in strength training,
right?
Or
you
visual
can,
training.
Absolutely, you can apply the concepts in a variety of different avenues. So while it might not be technically on a PRI non-manual CD. Yeah. You're applying the concept still, and yeah. so I might not be doing a traditional PRI tactic, but it's got a PRI concept behind it
yeah.
that I'm not losing sight of because at the end of the day, we're all asymmetrical, obviously, yeah. in the whole, well, everything that, that we've talked about previously. But
it's cool, Dan, as you mentioned, we're not here to be on a soapbox, but so many different industries and fields have, whether it was influenced by this institute or this science or not, it may not have been, but the coin is turning to where people are actually, you know, it's commonality to see people working on
yeah.
core rib mechanics or core
yeah.
stability or respiration and breathing or,
yeah.
you know, whatever modality you want to say you use, people are finally discussing these concepts.
Right.
So,
yep.
It's awesome. 2006, 2007, you said you're kind of engulfing yourself more in the coursework and kind of feeling your own skin and comfortable in it.
Now, remember at that point, though, that the struggle at that point was there wasn't really too many people you could ask questions to. Now,
yeah,
that's not
exactly.
the case today. So, like you said, our hope is that nobody has that kind of struggle again, and primarily because there are more resources now than there
yeah.
was 15 years ago. So I would email Janie.
Internet, for one.
Yeah.
an email.
Right. I would email Janie with questions. And
yeah.
and initially, Janie was very kind in answering, but Janie wasn't clinical at that point.
Yeah.
So eventually she was like, you got to ask Jason. He does clinical stuff. I'm kind of, she was not doing clinical at that point. So Jason, again, that's kind of, Jason and I kind of corresponded via email before we even actually met each other. And he was kind enough to answer my questions and stuff. But, and a lot of the information was stuff online, so I read what I could on the PRI website,
yep.
and but now,
which still is very minimal compared to what it is today.
Oh, so back then it was a couple of articles,
couple techniques,
yeah,
maybe an article or
yeah,
two.
That was about it. So that struggle that I had should not really exist today because now there are how many PRC PRTs, you know, how many people
yeah.
have taken courses, more than 10 courses, but not necessarily certified.
Yeah.
How many PRC centers are there? How many more faculty are there? Back then it was one.
Yeah,
you know. So there are infinitely more resources available to anybody who takes PRI at this
yep.
point. So that two-year window that I had to study myself and not really be able to, and just really Jason emailing
trial
back and
error,
forth, right?
Yeah.
And that shouldn't really exist these days because there are so many more resources available.
Yeah.
Like just the concept of a Zoom video phone call
exactly, yep.
didn't exist back then.
Well, and on the topic of resources, you mentioned kind of how, you know, let's say the website back then might have had, you know, at the time, you know, not only was there, we didn't have the resources on our website, but websites in general were new.
Right.
The resources themselves, the research hadn't been published yet.
No.
You know, a lot of these concepts of, as we just mentioned, respiration or mobility or range of, these things are all new at that time. Today, I just, last week, we really highlighted the fact that all of our courses have, as you know, dozens of research articles behind them.
Yeah.
References and leads to other references.
Hundreds in each manual.
Yeah. And so there's just tons of rabbit holes as far as resources and references. I think it's a good time, Dan, to mention, after you, we'll get into kind of how you became more involved as far as wanting to become a faculty member or where that kind of generated from. But as we're on the topic of resources, kind of mention what brought you to wanting to, you know, author and kind of highlight some more fundamental, you know, relationships between testing and reference centers and gate cycles. So Dan, for anyone that doesn't know, Dan authored a couple articles here relating the adduction and abduction lift tests to reference centers and the gate cycle. But Dan, what led you to kind of want to be a part of contributing to resources?
So back in 06, when I started taking classes again, that's when Ron had rolled out the Huruska ab and adduction lift tests. So were it not for those two tests, I for sure would not be doing PRI, because I needed something that had some sort of
objectivity.
Yeah, there, that I could grab onto and utilize and tell me what I should do next. That was really the struggle back then, is, okay, now what do I do? Well, the ab and adduction lift test really kind of give you that highway pathway blueprint that you're looking for. And so in 06, he introduces these two tests. Now, I know he didn't introduce those two tests for me, but I feel like he did. Because
hopefully others feel
that. And hopefully others feel that same way too. Yeah, you bet. Because from 06 on, that's how basically I started looking at PRI, was through these two tests. And so I started doing more of the adduction lift test than the ABD abduction lift test, but definitely trying to get more comfortable with the tests and doing them, interpreting them, knowing where to go next. And so that's kind of how I've been doing PRI, is with these two tests since pretty much 06. And so then when I got on faculty, I wanted to make sure. So these two articles were written out of my own necessity to just learn. And so I first wrote the one, the Huruska ab and adduction lift test relative to the gait cycle, because I just wanted to make sure that I was applying the tests that I knew and liked correctly to the gait cycle, and was I actually seeing and interpreting and learning the things I needed to see, learn, and interpret. And James had kind of helped me, not kind of, but he very much helped me in that approach to try to see these tests in a much more gait-related sequence. And so I put this paper together to kind of sequence it in my own head. I just sent it to Ron and just said, hey, does this track?
Does this make sense?
Does this make sense? And Ron's like, yep, that's going in advanced integration. And I'm like, well, that wasn't the intent
that's
of the paper.
That's not what I'm trying to do.
Right. Here. I just want to know if it's correct or not. And so then this summer I took the non-manual workshop. And for my money, if there's two classes that PRI offers that are infinitely clinical, it is the non-manual workshop. Because then you just get an insight as to Ron's thought process in developing these non-manual techniques, and impingement and stability. Those are my two favorite classes. But the summer I took the first time I could take the non-manual workshop, and the reference centers, there's 10 of them, and I wanted to apply those reference centers to the two tests, the ab and adduction lift test. So I wrote that other paper as well, and hopefully people like them and read them, but they were more born out of, I want to make sure I have in my own head the thought process correct so that I can apply these two tests in the manner in which I want to apply them, so that I can see what I need to see, track what I need to track, you know, be as objective as I can. Because the challenge for me, coming from this linear, myopic, orthopedic sports medicine standpoint, is the neurology of PRI.
Well, and how do you, as we said, how do you, you know, we can mention kind of one of the questions that a faculty in training brought up to you and the group, but how do you objectively measure the neurology behind PRI?
For sure.
So these two tests,
they're,
you know,
a great way to do it.
As you mentioned, I've learned what I have learned about PRI just from being around it for so long, but if I were to learn PRI as someone out on the street, I don't, you know, I have the same view as you do. You're going to want to know pretty quickly. How are you objectively going to measure this? What are the results that are being seen? And how do you didactically keep those results straight?
That's exactly right. So that's kind of where the impetus behind these two papers came. And right now I'm working on another paper that, you know, because the Hruska abduction lift test, the ABD abduction lift test, is such a dense, valuable frontal plane great test. There's a lot going on there, and so I'm in the process of writing another document about how to fine-tune the criteria you're looking for from the cervical, thoracic, pelvic, femur perspective, and it's a much longer process because that test is just very in-depth. But
Well, and some people, you know, as you probably did early on, you take a couple primary courses and you want to know how to apply this.
Yeah.
Some people probably, you know, heavily rely on just that test as part of their treatment, their regression, progression.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in my opinion, if you have any interest of getting better at PRI, you've got to learn these tests and get better at them.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, thank you for contributing to those. I know he really obviously loved them, and it wasn't your goal to supply them to the world.
No.
But
I just wanted a yes or no.
Well, and they're definitely useful, and particularly, you know, as you mentioned, kind of James's relationship with the gait cycle. He's probably, you know, one of the best at relating concepts to gait. But when you have a mindset of, you know, everything can be related to gait, and whether it should, you know, whether that's your goal or not, it's beneficial and helpful for the learner.
I mean, that's one of the advantages of having this osteopathic background I had is I'm trying to link everything back to breathing and gait. And I was doing that early on, even after PT school. I just didn't know it. But that's what I find so valuable about PRI is if you can't breathe and walk, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
I mean, really, you're expected to throw a ball and you can't walk and breathe?
Well, and we get a lot of, you know, I wouldn't call it criticism, Dan, but a lot of feedback of the complexities of PRI.
Yeah.
And there are plenty, as you know.
There are plenty.
Just the one test alone has 3 pages of complex didactic information. But as you mentioned, it's also really simple when you step back and say, let's relate this to something we do every day, all day.
Right.
Everything can be applied to gait and everything can be applied to respiration.
Right.
And so I feel like if you start there, it's a little bit less daunting to look at this thing.
Well, even like these two tests, you can go down a rabbit hole if you want to, but you don't have to.
Exactly.
You can use it as just a very linear blueprint of just where I need to go, or you can drill down into what is the temporal bone doing, which you don't have to do, but that's the beauty of these tests is you can use them as superficial or as deep as you need them to, and that's the genius behind these two tests.
Well, and I didn't want to, you know, we kind of got on a side tangent there, which is awesome because, you know, that's the meaning behind how you laid your own foundation and kind of clarity within your own mind. Walk us through a little bit, you know, once you got to this point in your career, what, you know, how did it come about for you to become more involved and start teaching with the Institute?
Yeah, so in 2014, I took the baseball course, and then I took the PRI baseball course vision. So there's a 3-day deal, and I took those, and I was there. It was fall 2014. I decided that, and I just got certified in 2012, and I talked with my wife, and our kids were young enough at the time, and I was like, if I'm gonna do this, I'd really like to get more plugged into the PRI community. And at that point, we were looking to change jobs, and that's part of the reason why I changed jobs in 2015 was I was going to go work with Chris and Jen Poulin in North Carolina, and my wife just couldn't find a job, and the timing just didn't work out. And in 2015, then, I knew I was going to make a change from the place I had been for the last 13 years, which was a private practice that had changed hands a couple of times, but it was, you know, your standard patients every 30 minutes, you know, stamp. But at that point, the people that were asking to see me were not post-ops. So I was seeing a more PRI-friendly... That's not the right way to say, because every patient's PRI friendly. But I was not seeing your standard post ops. I was not seeing your standard, you know,
you were
manual people.
To,
no, the people that were seeking PRI out, because that's where I was at the time, was a very different diagnosis code patient population, which was great, and that's what I wanted to see anyway. But in 2015, my wife and I had thought about it and prayed about it, and we were looking on the PRI website, and like I said, we were pretty much going to move down to North Carolina. Things just kind of didn't work out on our end, not the Poolins then, but on our end. And so I was kind of bummed. And then Donna, who I work with now, Donna Parisi Bruin.
Also part of your PRC class.
PRC 2012, that's right. Jesse Hamm, PRC 2012, best class.
Big group, yeah.
She and I were just kind of talking. We both had attended Cervical Revolution in New York City. It was the fall of 2015. And she and I had known each other professionally. She had hosted courses. I'd hosted courses up in the clinic in Northern Illinois. And so we'd known each other professionally for years. We were in the same certification class. So Don and I had known each other for a long time. And we were just talking, and I kind of told her what I was looking to do, get more immersed in PRI and looking to maybe make a change. And she was like, you should just come work with me. And I was like, don't even, like, joke about that.
I just had this thing fall
right,
through.
Right. And so Ron happened to be standing there. So the three of us were kind of talking, and Ron's like, you should totally go work with her. And so that's kind of how
it happened. Like, he knew anything about
right.
the story. Like,
right. So that's, well, no, he knew that I was looking to make a change. He knew that yeah. I almost worked with the Poolins, and he'd kind of been privy to some of that information. He was like, you should totally go work with Donna. It'd be great. And so that's how that whole kind of got started. So not long after that, Ron calls me, and he goes, you should come teach for the Institute. Now, I had no concept, thought process, inkling, nothing. That was not on my radar in the slightest. It was completely out of the blue. Hey, why don't you come teach for us at the Institute? And in fact, we're going to start in the next year. This is the end of 2015. I'm going to have Cantrell call you. So Mike Cantrell calls me. We get things kind of set up and start teaching in 2016. But yeah, that's kind of how it started. Ron.
Which is so, it's just so funny, Dan, because there's no one kind of way it happens, but you know, you listen to Jen Poulin or Lori or some of these other people, and for example, Jen Poulin went up to Ron saying, I want to teach, or yeah. I think she said, I have to teach this yeah. information. Yeah. You get kind of cold called, like...
Right, well, Jesse was kind of cold called. Sounds like Lori kind of got roped into doing the pelvic program.
Quite honestly, as the Institute and as we keep evolving, you look at people, where they're at, what risk they're willing to take for their own clinical success, who they surround themselves with, all these attributes and all these, you know, check marks, if you will. At the time, you probably didn't feel so stable. I mean, you just kind of started this new gig with Donna.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, felt pretty stable.
As far as the newness and like being cold called.
Yes, it was a lot of changes happening at the same time. Yeah, you're right. But it was, that wasn't my plan. That was never my agenda. That was never on my radar. But I'm eternally grateful for it to happen because I am a significantly better clinician because of it. But yeah, I don't know. Ron just has a way of kind of tapping people for at the right... if you go back and look at the history of PRI, there's just been a lot of things that have happened at the right time. I mean, James Anderson walks into Ron's life at that time.
Yeah.
Or Ron walks into James' life at that time. How Mike got involved. How Jen Poulin, Protonix, right. How Lori, like I just listened to her story. I mean, great story of how she got involved, and Louise and Jesse, and I mean, a lot
really
of us.
All of you, yeah.
Very, the timing was what was good, and how it laid out, and you know.
Well, and it doesn't go unnoted, or you know, for many people it may not be appreciated, but it's a task, and you get this call, and you think, A, am I the guy for this?
Exactly.
Am I ready?
Exactly.
Do I want to be ready? What do I have to get done to get ready?
Very true.
So if you could, walk us through... The other thing I'll mention, Dan, we have... You know, you're teaching here this weekend, myokinematic restoration. We're continuously adding faculty and hopefully, you know, people consider, you know, mentorship and different opportunities to learn from us and with us. We have Casey here this weekend who's doing some faculty training, and she'll be coming on board next year. You know, we'll sit down with Casey later on and get an interview with her. But walk us through for you what it was like to go from getting the unexpected call to then in 1 year's time getting ready to teach a course.
Yeah, that was an interesting 6 months, that's for sure.
And do you remember, like, how many courses you attended? Or, I mean, at that point, the training process was, it's still similar where, you know, you attend courses with faculty, you train, maybe take one section at a time, ask questions to faculty, review it, review.
Yeah.
But what was the biggest challenge as far as, I mean, wrapping your head around, you almost had to go towards a myopic viewpoint of focusing just on Myokin.
And that was
in order to teach Myokin.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened. Is I immersed myself in the home study that at that time was the old James Anderson one, which I still have.
Old.
Yeah, I was still learned. It was great. And then just went through the manual, and I had a legal pad. And what I did is as I was going through the manual in the home study, I would just write down questions, and I had a full legal pad of questions. And every time I had a few minutes with James or Mike or Jen Poulin or Jen Platt or Ron, or didn't make any difference, I wanted to make sure I had my questions answered. And that took me probably close to a year probably to kind of get that. And it was a lot of hours and a lot of time to be able to get through that. And then it was, being able to get comfortable speaking in front of a crowd and being able to slow down and be able to convey the information. And then that's just a learning curve. There's a learning process. Yeah.
And you guys all have such a great skill, and you guys are evolving every day as faculty, and we get feedback from course attendees, and we're blessed to have such a varied faculty that, you guys each have your own interests, your own passions, your own backgrounds, but you have to be able to sit at the front of the room instead of in the back of the room questioning. You have to kind of think, okay, how are they perceiving this? How did I perceive that when I was in their chair?
Yeah.
And you have to focus on, we're sitting here talking about your story. You had to focus on myokinematic, and I'm sure you'll get into other courses, but to be able to just go up there and stay on task about those concepts without bringing in other clinical, as a clinician, you use more than just myokinematic.
Right.
But for the sake of teaching, it's...
Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason why. I had no problem being myopic is not something that's hard for me to do, to a fault. But it really kind of hindered me clinically to a certain extent. And so as I was going through this process, and I'd be shadowing whether it was James or Mike or Jen or whoever it was, and talking just about different clinical cases, and I can't remember if it was Mike or James had said to me, you treat with just other than myokin, right? You don't just, even though you're studying myokin as much as you are right now, you can't treat clinically as myokin. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. There's a pelvis there too, and there's a rib cage. Yeah. So I was so myopic on myokin for the better part of a year that I had to really be like, I got to shut that part of my brain off and then be more clinical, which is more obviously this holistic top-down, bottom-up approach. And that again, was a learning experience, being able to, and it made me a better clinician to be able to see and interpret and those things. And maybe that's why I enjoy teaching myokin, is that being able to be myopic for a couple of days is not something that's overly challenging, because that's what, and the PowerPoint's very helpful, because it helps you stay on track.
And at the same time, you're given the opportunity to kind of be a piece of someone's journey. Maybe it's their introduction to the science, or maybe they've taken a few courses, but teaching the myokin course, you can really have a first initial impact on their PRI journey.
Well, and how the way that myokin is presented today is definitely not the way it was presented 15 years ago. I mean, there are just some ideas and concepts that, because 15 years ago, PRI was brand spanking new. Well, now it's not. And there's, even though some people arrived to PRI as their first PRI class, a lot of times they've heard of PRI before, or they've had a colleague who has done it before. So they're not completely, completely foreign to them as a notion or as an idea.
Well, that's a huge advantage now than it was 15 years ago.
They've been
introduced to it before being introduced to
it.
Correct. So, Dan, we won't spend much more time here, but as we talk about your faculty role, and you've already mentioned a lot of the benefits for you personally and your clinical practice, other than the rewarding aspects, what challenges you the most, not only just standing in front of a group of people, but you mentioned you're fairly comfortable with being myopic and focusing just on these concepts. What's the biggest challenge for you as far as, didactically presenting material?
Yeah, that's a good question.
It's a tough answer, but...
Yeah, there's a couple things. Like, we just had a meeting today with... I met with Ron and Jen and Casey today. One of them... And this is... just my opinion, but I think one of the hardest things about teaching anything that you haven't written yourself is that it's not yours.
Yeah.
So it's really, the challenge is to be able to represent the Institute appropriately, to represent the material that we all, at this juncture in our lives, we all value and love and utilize, and we want to make sure that you also have the same value and love and utilization of it. To be able to convey that to total strangers, that sometimes is the biggest challenge with material that I didn't write.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's hard to be a seasoned, successful practicing clinician with all this material, but then having to kind of go back to day one where you were that student.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And you're right. Being able to remember what it was like to be in their shoes and making sure that their experience, like the only goal, one of our main goals anyway, is to make sure that the listener's experience is valuable and is worthwhile.
And they're going to leave with beneficial tools immediately that they can go take clinically back to their practice.
Yeah, we want to make them better clinicians. I mean, that is our ultimate goal. Yeah. And I guess those would be the biggest challenges, you know. And obviously the challenge...
For anyone,
right. And it's kind of evolved. You know, it used to be, I don't want to screw up.
Yeah.
Well, now that's not really an apprehension of mine. And now I want to make sure that their experience is something that they can take with them and they can be a better clinician as a result. So it's really switched from what I want to want to make sure that they get what they want out of it.
Yeah. You do a great job. Dan, we mentioned Donna briefly. And before we wrap up today, I want to just kind of go over your current clinical setting and involvement. One thing that we do pride ourselves on with all the faculty members is the fact that you guys are clinicians. Some of them, you know, that includes athletic trainers and, you know, strength people, and you guys are all focused on different things. But when it comes down to the heart and soul of each of you, you were clinicians first, and we talked about the various ways that people have come on board as faculty. And as you mentioned, one of the biggest benefits of teaching is being able to go back and perform it clinically and get better as a clinician. Walk us through what a day in your shoes looks like today. You know, you mentioned teaming up with Donna, who was part of your PRC class in 2012. You know, how you guys bounce off of each other, what your clinic, you know, is like as far as typical caseload or certain interest groups. I know we'll have Donna on and discuss her involvement with Pilates and the PRI Pilates community.
Yeah.
But kind of walk us through a day in your guys' clinic.
So it's a Pilates studio, and we have three private treatment rooms. And so I'm in one room, and we have another physical therapist who's there part-time, and then Donna's in another room. So we treat regular outpatient physical therapy caseloads, and it's really at this point, it's either they're coming to us at this point because they've heard of PRI, they've been recommended PRI, they've done their own research, found PRI on the website. So a lot of times they end up coming to us as a result of that. But it's really been benefit, and Donna will tell you the same thing. Having the two of us working together has really significantly increased and accelerated our PRI growth, because every now and again we'll just catch each other for 10 minutes and be like, hey, I'm seeing this. What do you think? Or I'm having a difficult time doing this. What do you like to do for this? And it's just been a really neat opportunity for the two of us to collaborate and discuss and trade patients back and forth. And it's been infinitely valuable to the both of us. I'm speaking for Donna a little bit, but it's been very valuable for the both of us to be able to grow as individuals.
Well, and just be in the same
collaborators
setting.
Yeah, so it's been great.
You know, we talked about earlier how over the course of, you know, we were founded in 2000, and next year we'll celebrate our 20th anniversary, and we're very excited for that. But over the course of those two decades, a lot of people, you know, there's still parts of the country and parts of the, you know, internationally where people are on these little islands, we call them PRI islands, where they're in these locations where they don't have a Donna next to them, or they don't have a colleague that even knows about PRI. Maybe they're in a hospital system or a huge, you know, corporate world. But as you said, to work side by side with someone that has the same background, the same, you know, you guys, you know where each other's at as far as knowledge base, and you're both to some degree at the same level of,
definitely.
Of your own knowledge. Such a blessing.
Yeah. You know? Well, the first 11 years I did PRI, I was on that island.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was in that, you know, fast paced outpatient orthopedic, you know, a lot of post-op. That was my first 11 years. So I had to learn, and it is challenging, particularly back then, to get better at PRI in that setting. But it's totally doable, particularly now, but with the number of resources that we kind of talked about before. But yeah, that it is challenging. There's no doubt about it. It is challenging.
Well, and it, you know, I don't know about you. I was not in your shoes or in those shoes, but it seems like from an outside view, it would almost make you stronger within your own PRI knowledge because it forces you to really understand the science. You know, let's say you don't have a colleague that's on board.
Yeah.
Let's say you're getting kickback from a department chair or colleagues throughout your practice that say, you know, what's this guy doing?
Yeah.
You know, take it back to St. Elizabeth's where his own department didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah. No,
it almost makes you a little bit more solid. You know, you have to defend the concepts that you're using to some degree.
And well, the advantage, I think the advantage in that setting is reps, is that you'll get enough repetition because of the pace you're seeing patients at. Now, are you going to be able to work for an hour one-on-one and be able to do all your evaluation and all? No. But you're going to get plenty of reps of, okay, I'm going to do adduction drop tests today.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do it on everybody. I'm going to do horizontal abduction drop test today for the shoulder.
Yeah.
Do a bunch of them. I'm going to do Horesca adduction lift test today.
Your clinical practice turns into more of a exploration of technique and, you know,
and so that's
almost
why it's
a case study.
Yeah. But in that setting, you want to pick one thing.
Yep.
Pick one test, one activity, and just play around with it and do it because you're going to get reps.
Until you're good at it.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to get 50, 60, 70 reps a week, you know, potentially. And that's where the advantage comes in is you get reps upon reps upon reps upon reps. And then it's easier for you to then cultivate, okay, I've done that activity.
Yep.
Let me try this one. Let me do this test. And over the course of a month, now you've done three or four tests and three or four activities that you've had the reps at to get good at and be able to cue properly and that kind of thing. So there is an advantage in that setting. Yeah.
As we end, a big thing that we're currently getting a little bit of feedback for is people that are trying to go from being the graduate out of school to, you know, let's say the cervical spine or cervical revolution, or let's say they're just going from A to Z without having that intermediate repetition of being on that PRI island. You know, it's not really beneficial for you to walk into Donna's clinic as a new grad and just be spoon-fed everything.
No.
You know, here's
you
the technique.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there is a process, and one of Ron's favorite sayings is trust that process. And, you know, your journey from being uncomfortable in your own skin using the science to teaching it and working with a fellow PRC next to you required all those middle steps.
And
so,
and for me, it's took some time and a lot of steps and, you know, took a lot of classes and a lot of review and that kind of thing. And that's, everybody's personality is different. That just happens to be a learning style that works for me. But you can't shortchange the work. I mean, there is an element of effort and time. I mean, if PRI was easy, everyone would do it. But nothing valuable came without work.
Yeah, it's kind of like the quote, I don't even know where it's from. It's been thrown around throughout my life, but there's really no shortcut for anywhere worth going is the quote. And it's like you can't go to full autonomic function and regulation without appreciating the repositioning or the biomechanics underneath all of it.
Right.
So that's what's cool, I think, about myokinematic and the coursework that you teach, you know, and these articles that we discussed and all this foundational activity really... You know, it really allows people to get that solid foundation and pushes them into the next phase.
Yeah, foundation's key. You're right.
Well, Dan, I it's been a pleasure. I've had a wonderful time talking
to you. Thanks, RJ. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
We're excited to have you here to teach over the next couple days. Dan, I'll include ways to find out more about you, and we'll list all this information on your faculty page and different places, your find a provider page. But for anyone interested, the two articles that we mentioned are available on Dan's faculty and find a provider pages. hugely beneficial, as we, you know, we discussed. You know, there's enough here to dive into over a weekend. You could probably spend a whole weekend on those two articles. You probably spent many weekends on them. But Dan, you are practicing in Wilmette currently with Donna Byrne and Hoogland Physical Therapy. People can find you on our website. Once again, thanks for being here.
And, yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I don't know if you have any additional comments. One thing I like to ask Dan is kind of what you're active with. I know you've got some kids at home and high school age now.
Well, middle school, so they just started 6th and 8th grade yesterday.
Okay. Yeah. I was thinking maybe first year of high school.
Close, yeah.
8th grade. Yeah, one more year.
One more year. Yeah.
So I like to ask Dan, people, you know, when it comes to outside involvement or hobbies or things you guys like to do as a family, I know you're talking about some travel coming up, but what brings you, you know, the most joy when you're not, you know, either in the office or teaching or things you like to do with your kids?
So our kids are pretty active. My daughter's a competitive swimmer and she's been doing that for a couple of years now. And it's great just to see her progress and grow and get better at it. And my son plays lacrosse and basketball and he's going into 6th grade. So now he's just starting to kind of see competition and enjoy it and be able to experience that a little bit. But it's obviously, as a parent, to be able to see them grow and compete and
you're reliving and those sports right. Once you were in.
So. Yeah, and we just got back from a trip. We hung out with James Anderson and his family a couple weeks ago. We did some hiking out in some of the national parks out in Utah. And so we try to take a good, you know, summer trip getaway every year and let's show the kids things that they just have read about or have only heard about. But I play as much golf as I can, which these days isn't a whole lot. But no, my wife Becky is very very tolerant of my peer
activity.
My white binders, as the kids like to call them. And no, she's been very supportive through this whole process. So,
well, Dan, you're awesome, and you know, we always appreciate the family behind, you know, all of our faculty and the sacrifices they make to let you come and teach and be a part of our institute. So once again, thank you. And if you're interested in contacting Dan or learning more about, you know, the articles he wrote, feel free to visit his page. We'll have this posted on there. Once again, look forward to you presenting here this weekend, and you'll be all throughout the country again in 2020. Yeah,
that's right.
So we'll get Dan's 2020 courses posted here continually this fall. And if you get the chance, definitely I recommend getting to a course with Dan if you haven't already. So thanks, Dan.
All right. Thanks, RJ. Yep. Appreciate it.
If you're interested in learning more about the Postural Restoration Institute, you can visit our website at posturalrestoration.com. You can also email me directly at info@posturalrestoration.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter to see how PRI Nation is currently applying this science. As always, thank you for listening, and I look forward to having you on our next episode.